Only right in your own home.
This is Maurizio Bianchi behind us right now, playing the Clockwork Orange soundtrack. That is, playing the record, the soundtrack too. It's called MB Plays the Clockwork Orange, and that's what he's doing, Maurizio Bianchi. Esplendo Geometrico, prior to that, from Tokyo Sinfin Live, it was El Empuje del Desarrollo Tecnico. And, mostly things were sort of blended together this past set. Daniel Stephen Crafts made a fantastic collage in 1982 called Snake Oil Symphony. And it was comprised entirely of television pitchmen. And we heard part 7, Snake Oil Symphony 7. How do you say this band's name? This was kind of in there. Trepanner Rings Ritual and the Ritual of Trepanning from their 2010 release Septentrional, an excerpt from Eterne. More of Maurizio Bianchi playing the Clockwork Orange before that, and we heard a bit of Jim French with Henry Kaiser and Diamanda Galas from Jim French's 1979 record If Looks Could Kill, and a track entitled Looks Could Kill. And The Boredoms from 1993's Super Roots, the track that closes out that record. Am I going to attempt this? What the heck? We've got almost 3 minutes. Chocolate Out, Pitch at Bunch on Itch, Machine 3, Monster Rex, and Sound Around Us, Nuts Room Ear, Wig, Web, 96 Teenage Bondage, Super Frake 9. We heard excerpts from that track. My name is Scott. I've loved being with you today. I look forward to doing it again next week. and as long as we can stand each other. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm seriously hoping for the best. It's all we got. There's this thing about humans and amnesia, collective amnesia. It's a necessary component of our biology. Because without it, why would we keep coming back to this crap? Right? All right. Let's forget what happens every other year and know that this will be our year, 2026. All right. Looking forward to seeing you next week. Stay tuned. Mark Hurst and Tectonic with station manager Ken is coming right up. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, in New York City, in Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned, please. Hey, where'd you go, Bianchi? There you are. Tectonic's coming right up. Stay tuned.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour. It's great to have you with me. And I am so happy not to be alone in Studio A. I've got with me station manager Ken Friedman. Ken, are you with us?
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Great to be back here at William Floyd Municipal University in the communications building.
We're gonna explain that reference here in just a moment. I should explain to listeners that this is a tradition now going for, I don't know how many years, several years, in which Ken and I start off the year by talking about the year ahead and what's happening in tech. Just a free-flowing conversation. And if you want to see the links and resources that we're referring to during our conversation, go to the playlist at tectonic.fm. That's T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and you'll see it there. And if you click into the playlist, by the way, top and center, you're going to see this image that starts with the header AI Overview. And there's some text below it that says, WFMU, parentheses, William Floyd Municipal University, and by the way, the parens are never closed, a college radio station hosted the Fugs for a live concert in 1968, and goes on about that concert. So, Ken, this was an image that you sent over to me, and I thought this was indicative of where we are and where we're headed for this next year. So why don't we start there? What happened with this AI overview?
Well, we are hosting a Fugs documentary at our venue, Monty Hall, Saturday night. And I was trying to see if I could find a concert flyer from when the Fugs did a benefit concert for us back in November 1968 at Cafe Agogo. And so I was using DuckDuckGo, and then I couldn't find anything there. So I used the Google, I'm sorry, and I just typed in, you know, Fugs concert WFMU 1968, and up came this paragraph from AI.
Google AI.
Yeah.
Delivering the goods once again.
And it identified WFMU as belonging to a non-existent university called William Floyd Municipal University. So then I'm like, okay, where did it get that? Does that place even exist? So I Googled William Floyd Municipal University, and sure enough, it doesn't even exist. I couldn't find a single reference to it anywhere online. So, you know, this is what they call a hallucination. And actually, perhaps hallucination is the right word, because I used to get very upset that AI errors were called hallucinations. Why not just call them mistakes or errors? But this made me understand that this isn't an error. I don't know how it came up with this. There is a William Floyd High School out on Long Island. There's William Floyd Park. There's a couple of other William Floyd institutions, but there's no such place as the William Floyd Municipal University.
Well, so you're saying that it's not so much that Google got it wrong and that they're giving misinformation or disinformation pointing to some other university. It just made something up out of whole cloth that doesn't exist anywhere, and that more closely resembles, you know, the crazy shapes that one might see when you're hallucinating.
A confabulation. Yeah,
well,
so maybe hallucination is the right word.
I think some people don't like that word because it imputes some sort of sentience to the AI mechanism, as though it's a brain, because brains are the organs that hallucinate, and this is just a pile of linear algebra with, you know, some racism and environmental destruction mixed in.
And this reminds me of a discussion we've had in the past about AI model collapse, which is that when AI first started, it was sucking up everything that it could find on the internet, which at the beginning was all stuff written by humans. Now, so much of what's on the internet is written by AI, and it's still sucking all that up, meaning that the quality of what you get is just going down and down and down. So William Floyd Municipal University has never been spelled out online before. Now it's out there.
Right, so some other AI is now going to ingest this.
Right, exactly. So maybe in the future, William Floyd Municipal University will go down in history as the original owner of WFMU as opposed to Uppsala College.
Yeah, and they'll say, yes, William Floyd Municipal University was critical in the success of the FUGs.
Yeah.
That'll be in the next AI-generated history of that phase of
and
music.
I just want to get it out there that the William Floyd from William Floyd Municipal University is not the guy who signed the Declaration of Independence.
Okay.
It's the William Floyd, the famous atheist.
Oh.
Who edited the New York City atheist newspaper, The Arbitrator.
Yeah. And that's the William Floyd for whom the high school is named.
No, saying. The municipal university.
Okay. Well, since the AIs are going to be ingesting this conversation, I'm glad you set the record straight there. That's an important effect to bring up, that as the AIs ingest their own excreta and the excreta of other AI sludge factories, the next generation of output just gets that much further degraded.
And I've read some studies that say that it's over time, AI is getting more and more things wrong.
Well, how can it not?
Yeah.
How can it not when that's the... So there's... I read a story, this is not on the playlist, but I read a story a couple of weeks ago about a guy out there whose mission is to collect all the text or as much text as he can that was posted online before the first LLM came online. And so it's pre-AI human-generated text that he's trying to archive before everything gets overrun by AI.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like there were these battleships in World War I that were sunk into very deep water, into these deep fjords. And the steel from those battleships was really important in the space race because they predated the irradiation of the atmosphere in the atomic age.
Huh.
And when they built spaceships, they needed to make sure there was no radiation coming off of the metal that would mess with the very sensitive instruments.
Right.
So the pre-atomic battleship steel was really important, and it was highly sought after. And that's why, to finish this anecdote, Ken, there are pieces of World War I battleships on the moon right now.
Interesting.
So in this case, we're looking at an internet that is being overrun by the sludge that just dissolves everything in its path. So it's nice that there's someone out there who's trying to get an archive, hopefully leaving it at an arm's distance and with an air gap from being compromised by the AIs still roving around the landscape.
Some AI models are now rejecting the LLM model, large language model, and are going for small language models.
Yeah.
To avoid the problem of model collapse, they're rather than sucking up the entire internet, they're just sucking up, say, the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Right.
And using a much, much smaller subset of information on which to base themselves, which is probably a better way to go.
I think there are some limited, I've said on many shows, there is some limited use to this technology, and I think that's a good direction that has some possibility, where instead of putting up data centers, as Mark Zuckerberg has boasted of doing, that rival the size of Manhattan in their footprint, and sucking down all the power and water in these communities, just to use the idea of LLMs in a very narrow targeted sense that can run on a computer on a small corpus of text where you can do natural language queries, I think that could be used in a good way. So maybe there are some possible good outcomes to some of this technology that we'll see in 2026. But I wanted to start with, after now that we've gotten the William Floyd out of the way, I wanted to talk about, speaking of AIs dealing with excreta, I talk about sludge and slop and everything coming off of AIs, but here is something that is literally happening. There's a toilet manufacturer named Kohler. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the brand name Kohler, K-O-H-L-E-R. A few months ago, they came out with a new product. This is, of course, a toilet, and the product name is Dakota, spelled D-E-K-O-D-A. I don't know why it's spelled like that, but the Dakota toilet, or I should say this is an attachment to a toilet, a Kohler attachment to a toilet. This Dakota attachment is a surveillance camera. And it is pointed
inside the bowl,
into the bowl, so that, and I don't want to get scatological. I know there's FCC regulations, so I'm just going to try to speak somewhat abstractly here. The leavings of one's visit get photographed by the Dakota surveillance camera, and the surveillance of one's excreta, Kohler assures us, is purely for our benefit. So that they can tell us, give us an early warning if their AI engine can detect some correlation with some sort of disease. So that's why they need to look into the bowl after we're done.
From looking at the poop.
Yes, and this was announced. The Dakota camera was announced as though it was totally. All about privacy, committed to privacy, and they said it's end-to-end encrypted, meaning they encrypt it when it's taken, when the photo is taken, and then the encrypted data that's presumably unhackable then goes to Kohler's own surveillance data center somewhere in the cloud, and then it's decrypted where they can do whatever rendering they want on your data. It turns out that it's not actually end-to-end encrypted. There is a TechCrunch piece from December 3rd. End-to-end encrypted smart toilet camera is not actually end-to-end encrypted. So Kohler then came out and said, so it's not end-to-end encrypted, but it kind of uses encryption kind of a little bit. So they backed away from that. And then people said, hey, are you using photos of our poo to train your AI model? Which I think is just so perfect, you know, that the sludge factory is being trained with actual photos of excretion. And Kohler said, no, we would never. And then it turns out, yeah, they are. But Kohler says, but it's only opt-in, and it's only if we can't identify whose data it is.
But what are they really up to?
Well,
this is, you know what this reminds me of? There's that book, and it was a movie. Augustine Burroughs' book, Running with Scissors.
Okay.
Did you ever see that?
No, I never saw it.
Or read it?
No.
Well, there's a character in it. There's a crazy psychiatrist, I think. I'm a little fuzzy on it. But his whole thing is examining your poop. And like reading your poop as though he's reading tea leaves. And he's meant to be a total crackpot.
Of course.
Yeah.
But as always, the tech bros they probably read that book. And as always, in the vein of the Torment Nexus, they took it not as a warning, but as an instruction manual. You know what would be great, bro, is if we had a camera that did exactly what that crackpot doctor did. That would be awesome. And so to answer your question, Ken, why Kohler is doing this, the last sentence of the article answers the question. The Dakota costs $599 plus a mandatory subscription of at least $6.99 per month. So there's your answer. If you buy this surveillance camera, you are required to sign up. First, you got to pay Kohler $600, and then you got to pay him $7 or more per month for it to take photos of your poo and send it to their surveillance center somewhere. And that's just the overt business model. What Shoshana Zuboff and others would point out is that surveillance business models always have some other way beyond our recognition or our awareness or consent, where the companies are monetizing our data by selling it, by packaging it and selling the analysis to companies that value it.
Well, is this smart poop camera, is it also recording audio?
I'm sure Kohler would say, no, 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 we would never.
Because I was going to say, besides the pictures of the poop, it's getting a whole bunch of other metadata.
Right.
It's getting how often you use the toilet, how long you sit on the toilet, if you're talking to yourself or complaining or having a telephone conversation.
To train their AI.
They're getting that. They're getting your pooping noises. Yeah. They're getting a whole bunch of other stuff.
Well, let's say possibly that all they're doing is taking photos of the poo. I think it's probable, Ken, that what you just said is on the horizon.
I don't believe they're just, because that doesn't seem worth.
But my point is
worthy enough.
Even if all it was photos of this, and if they could figure out that you had some sort of disease, that analysis, I would have to imagine, would be packaged up and sent off to health insurers. Because the insurers want to know if you've got some disease, some condition, so that they can raise your rates. This is the same sort of thing that surveillance systems inside cars have been doing to drivers. They say, we're going to be monitoring all of the motions of the car, how fast you drive, how fast you brake, and so on, purely for your convenience. But what it turned out in the last year or two to be doing is selling that data to insurance companies so that they could raise the rates for car insurance for those drivers if they were found to be driving in a way that the insurer didn't like. So I would suspect any kind of surveillance like this is immediately a way of exploiting the user. And the fact that it's happening on the toilet is sort of amusing and a little too on the nose. But there it is for 2026. There's your metaphor.
Well, I hope they're recording audio, and I hope there's some way that I can get that audio. my Wednesday morning show could really use that.
Okay. Let's talk about...
Because, you know, most of the scatological noises that we have in the library, they're not real. They're fake.
They're fake. Oh.
Yeah, they're fake.
So you'd like
just
some
like
authentic...
most singing animal records are fake.
Really?
Yeah, it's usually people imitating animals as opposed to the real animals.
The dogs singing jingle bells?
Yeah, that's
They're not dogs?
Those are dogs, but they're cut up.
Yeah.
They're tape, you know, they're spliced together, so it's not exactly real.
Sure.
You know.
Let's continue in the vein of surveillance, although...
No, let's go back to the toilet. No, you go ahead.
But we're still going to be talking about bodies here, just not so scatological. There's this gym chain. It used to be called Blink Fitness here in New York City, and now I guess it was bought or they changed their name or something. It's called Pure Gym. And there are dozens of Pure Gym locations around New York City. I don't know if we have them here in New Jersey, but certainly they're in New York City. And they're installing these little surveillance tubes at the entrance. So you can't just, you know, wave a pass by an entrance desk and say hello to the attendant and walk into the gym like human beings have done as long as there have been passes in gyms. Now you have to stand in this cylindrical tube that is just big enough for one person. It's like something out of a Woody Allen movie where you're just standing there and being scanned. And so it scans your biometrics.
And it's closed. I saw a picture of it. It's not even like what you have to stand in at the airport with the TSA. It's actually a closed cylinder.
It totally encloses you. And that way, when they scan you, if the system doesn't like you, they can eject you out the other side, or I guess if it fully gets weaponized by something like ICE, they can just imprison you there.
Well, what is this for?
Well, what they say is it's purely for your convenience. We're here to make your experience as seamless as possible, and this allows you to enter the gym 24 hours a day because we just need to get an ID on you. And once we know that you're one of our members, you get to be let in so that you're not some random coming in from off the street. And so we're improving our service for you. Just stand in the tube. Stand in the tube. So the normalization of biometric scanning continues. There is a grocery store chain in New York City called Wegmans. And I think Wegmans is beyond New York City. Maybe some of our listeners outside New York will know this store chain. But anyway, in New York City, Wegmans is, this is from Gothamist on January 3rd, 2026. NYC Wegmans is storing biometric data on shoppers' eyes, voices, and faces. So this needs a little bit of explanation. So when you walk into a Wegmans, there's a little sign, at least for now. I'm sure they'll take them down at some point, but at least for now, there's a little sign that says, essentially, we do biometric scanning. And if you read the fine print, what it tells you is that as you walk through the store, they are going to scan your face. They're going to use facial recognition. They're going to scan your eyes. And I'm not sure how that's different from the facial rec camera, but maybe there's something specific they're doing with the eyes. But most interesting to me is that they're scanning your voice as well, meaning it's not just cameras. There are actually microphones in the store that are recording your voice, your conversation, anything you say in the store.
But not in the pet food aisle.
Why not?
That's where you go for privacy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Ken, but the pet food aisle is fully surveilled as well.
Damn.
So as you walk through Wegmans...
Once again, I just want to get my hands on that audio.
Maybe we should have the head of IT from Wegmans come in with a flash drive full of some of the greatest hits. I'm sure they've got people listening to customers' conversations.
Oh, yeah.
That could be really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've seen reports over the last couple of years as police departments have gained greater surveillance powers, they're always abused. There's always a cop who's a stalker of their ex who's watching, you know, in the surveillance cameras what their ex is doing.
Well, going back to the analog age, I spent a year as a news producer in Detroit for a CBS News Radio affiliate, and everything was analog back then. And we used to record the reporters and the anchor people. They would go into these booths to record their little report, and we, the engineers and producers, would be recording them. And oftentimes, they would go off onto weird tangents or even have telephone conversations, and everything got recorded. Well, in the back room at the radio station, we had a reel-to-reel tape with all the weirdest outtakes of these, you know, locally famous reporters having the strangest outbursts and conversations. And if you recorded something that was like worthwhile or weird or interesting, you just threw it on that tape. So of course I took the tape and I copied the entire thing, and I actually still have it.
You
somewhere.
Still have it?
Yeah, I still have it somewhere.
Oh,
it's on reel to reel tape.
We
but
have
I
to
do
play
have
that.
It. Yeah.
Listen, that would make a great outro for a Tectonic sometime. If you bring it in, just give me a few minutes of that. Surveillance footage can be fun, but that was, as you say, back in the analog age, when, you know, it was a very small select group of people. They knew they were being recorded, and it was,
yeah, but
you know,
they didn't know what we were doing with the recordings.
but there is a categorical difference,
yes,
from recording eight hosts locally to recording, you know, 370 million Americans wherever they go, whoever they associate with, and whatever they say in the grocery store and whatever they leave in the toilet. I mean, it's
right.
It's a full surveillance state that we have built. And
it's not fun.
No, it's not fun. We're not getting access
to... In the early Napster days, there was a phenomenon called the Mic-in-Track.
Right. Explain that.
The Mic-in-Track phenomenon was if you bought a computer and you put Napster on it, Napster... not only would put up any of the music that you wanted to put up onto Napster, but also if you recorded something, if you recorded audio on your computer, it automatically, by default, would make that available to the rest of the world, and it would, as default, attach a tag to it called mic in track, microphone in track. So if you were a Napster user, all you had to do was just go to Napster and search for the term mic in track, and you would find all these recordings,
right,
like just hundreds of thousands of them, of recordings of people who had just recorded weird stuff into their computer, completely not realizing that it was going to be made available to the rest of the world.
But again, it's...
That was fun!
That was fun, and as long as the audio wasn't identifying, it was one person saying something random, and it wasn't cross-referenced with every other piece of data about that person's life and biology.
God, it was so great.
So you would
get people like practicing their breakup speech, you know, and practicing, you know, their death metal voice. There's compilations of the mic and tracks.
That was the golden age of surveillance data.
Yeah.
When it was relatively
the good old days.
The good old days of surveillance, relatively harmless, as opposed to now when who knows what they have on each one of us and we don't have any access to it. There is no Napster that gives us.
That's true.
So we can't
But there are people who do have access to it.
The watchers. Yeah, there's a small group of watchers. Many of them work for Palantir, Peter Thiel's surveillance company that is sucking up all of this surveillance data and cross-referencing it. These fusion centers are where
they're obviously a bunch of humorless bastards because they never make it available. They never leak it. Think about all the video and all the audio that's out there. You know, and hardly ever does this stuff ever get leaked.
But then you got to wonder what happens if it gets hacked and then leaked. You know, like there are data sets that get leaked every day, social security numbers and credit card numbers and purchase history. And that's not very fun either.
I guess YouTube has quite a lot of police cams, like body cam footage.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like made available on purpose or whether it's somehow leaked.
Well, if there's a way for Google to squeeze a dollar out of it, I'm sure they're amplifying it. If we want to move on to the next story, this also has something to do with surveillance, unfortunately. This has to do with Disneyland. SF Gate reported on November 28, 2025, Disneyland's new plan to get everyone off their phones. So from the headline, it's a hopeful premise, and the article sets it up nicely. A Walt Disney executive acknowledged that phones are ruining Disneyland's magic. This is the president of Walt Disney Imagineering who says, "You're there together with friends and family and people that you care about, and every time you have to look down at a device or a phone, it breaks that spell." And of course, this person is selling some putative, magical experience within the Disney park, which people may or may not agree with. But it is true, whatever experience you are supposed to be having, it totally deadens it if you or the people you're with are constantly looking down at their phone, which, by the way, is what I see every time I come into this radio station. I ride on several subway trains, and over 90% of the riders never look up. They're in their phone playing their addictive Candy Crush or whatever the entire time. And you can imagine if that's the case in an expensive theme park like a Disneyland, it must feel like a zombie invasion. If someone has put time into designing the environment and the characters and the music and stuff, and people are just walking around on their phones. So there's your problem. Now, Disney feels like it has come up with a solution that, as the headline says, will get everyone off their phones. This is the article now. According to Vaughn, this Disney executive, Disney has the perfect solution, Meta's AI glasses. So this is Facebook Meta. Mark Zuckerberg has come out with these surveillance goggles that you're supposed to wear. Unfortunately, Ray-Ban/Luxottica signed an agreement with Mark Zuckerberg, and now Ray-Bans, any pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses you see may have the secret Mark Zuckerberg's spy cameras on both ends of the glasses. And the idea that Disney has is that the surveillance glasses will, quote, reinforce the shared experience with your family by allowing you to leave your phone in your pocket. So, Ken, what do you think of this? I mean, we're exchanging surveillance phones for surveillance glasses. Can you imagine bringing your family to this overpriced, incredibly expensive theme park, and then being handed surveillance glasses that are going to be recording and sending data back to Mark Zuckerberg about you, your conversations, your associations, your location, who knows what else.
Well, unfortunately, you know, this is the ultimate aim, isn't it, of big tech, to get people off their phones and to somehow embed the screen into their glasses.
Exactly.
Or their eyeballs.
Exactly.
Or their brains.
Exactly.
And they've been working on this for a long time, and there's a lot of chatter about the fact that, you know, the phone age is ending, and what's next is going to be even more invasive, and it's going to be exactly what you just described. It's going to be either glasses or contact lenses or, you know, something along those lines.
They are desperate. These companies are desperate for growth at any cost, and they see surveillance glasses as a way out because, as you're alluding to, Ken, it's something that stays on your body. So you don't have to make a choice about whether to pull it out of your pocket. The surveillance gear is always on.
But so far, their efforts are failing. So far, all the smart glasses have kind of failed in the marketplace. And we were talking before the show about, is it Apple Vision?
Apple Vision Pro.
Apple Vision Pro is doing terribly.
They had a
terrible Christmas season, and now they're sort of phasing out production of them. And there was the Google Glass fiasco many years ago. So they keep trying.
Yes.
And I do think it's going to eventually happen, but, you know, maybe not. I mean, that is some good news on the horizon that Apple Vision Pro is doing so badly.
That was really good news over the holiday season. It turned out that, as you pointed out, that the Vision Pro was not selling. It sold just a pitiful number of units over the holiday season, and Apple has made changes as a result to slash the marketing and production budget. I did a whole show on the Vision Pro when they came out to say what a dumb and harmful idea this thing was, because as opposed to Mark Zuckerberg's Luxottica Ray-Ban spyglasses, this was a headset that enveloped the entire upper half of your face. I called it a face jail on the show, because when someone puts it on, it blocks them out from everything and everyone around them.
But they put fake eyeballs on it, so it looks like you have eyes.
It looks really, really creepy. And the unit, they were selling it for $3,500. And I think Apple finally hit the wall where people said, you know, a lot of people say, we'll buy your overpriced surveillance phone, but no, we're not buying your incredibly overpriced surveillance face jail. So that was one bit of good news over the holiday season. What this means for Mark Zuckerberg's spyglasses, though, I don't know. I mean, if those get normalized, as this SF Gate story points out, you can record people around you without their knowledge if you're wearing those Ray-Bans. And when you walk out in public, friends, if anyone is wearing Ray-Ban sunglasses, watch what you say, because the footage could be captured by the spyglasses and could be shared on a social media service, and it could be picked up by the government aid. It could be picked up by ICE or any other government agency of your least favorite authoritarian.
And are they all the super thick frames like Zuck has been sporting lately?
They're getting thinner and thinner. It's getting really hard to, at a glance, distinguish the spyglasses from non-spy Ray-Bans.
What do you think of Zuck's new look this year?
Well, what is he up to now? I mean, he did a Roman emperor for a while. He did tech bro, I don't know.
How do we describe his latest look?
He was a wrestler for a while.
He's kind of got frizzy hair now, and then the super thick Ray-Bans.
Yeah, I don't like any of his looks. So I'm sure
he keeps cranking him out, though.
I know, there's going to be something new soon.
He's out there swinging.
He's trying to find some look that presents him as authentic and legitimately human, I guess. But so far, he hasn't landed on one that works. All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm joined, as I am every year at the start of the year, by WFMU station manager Ken Friedman. And we're talking about the year ahead in tech, just looking at some recent trends and disturbing headlines. Before we go to another dystopian news item, Ken, I thought it'd be fun just to take a little break and do a fun quiz.
Great.
That has to do with tech. This is something that I found online. I've posted it on the playlist. And listeners, if you want to see this, you want to play along, go to the playlist at tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. This is a little quiz with the headline, Show Your Age. And the deal is you get 1 point for each technology that you used, you know, back in the day when these technologies were used. So I'm going to list 20 technologies from the past, and you get 1 point for each one that you used when that was operative in society. Okay? You ready? Does that sound good, Ken?
Yeah, I'm looking at the list.
Oh, you're looking at the list. Okay.
I'm looking at the list. And
well, let me read it off, and you can...
Yeah, because listeners might want to weigh in themselves
okay.
on what... Because I'm looking at it, and it would be much faster for me to tell you which ones used.
Well, let me list them off for listeners who don't have the playlist in front of them. Number one, fax machine. Two, rotary phone. Three, encyclopedia. And by that, I think we mean a printed, hardbound encyclopedia.
Right.
Four, floppy disk. And I guess we could go...
Any kind.
Five and a quarter or three and a half.
There were so many of them.
Well, five and a quarter and three and a half were the big ones.
Maybe. Yeah.
There are other ones. Five, AOL address. By that, we mean AOL email address.
Right.
Something at AOL.com. Six, record player. Seven, dial-up internet. Eight, film camera. Nine... there's a little typo here. I think the person may not have been old enough to know. It says mixed tape, and I think what they meant to say was mixed tape.
Yeah, I think that's
M-I-X tape, yeah. Meaning cassette.
Mixed tape.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a mixed tape. It's a mixed tape. It's a cassette with
right.
a bunch of songs from various albums you put on together. 10, phone booth. 11, cursive, meaning writing in cursive with a pen or pencil. 12, checkbook, again, printed checkbook. 13, typewriter. 14, dictionary, printed dictionary. 15, VCR, and points if you know both the formats. 16, paper map. 17, waterbed. 18, postcard. 19, Walkman, the Sony Walkman. And 20, phone book. And let me just, I'll go first, Ken, because my answer is really easy. 20 out of 20. I used all 20 of these.
I'm a 19 out of 20.
Really? What's
yeah.
the one that you...
I never had an AOL email address.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of all of those?
Yep.
Wow.
Because FMU got email so early.
It was before AOL got big?
yeah. Or just as it was happening, yeah, everybody at FMU got a WFMU.org
wow.
email address. So I did use AOL.
Right.
I had an AOL account. So I guess maybe I did have an AOL address.
Yes,
but,
you did.
But I never used it.
But okay.
Okay, I'm 20.
Well,
I'm 20 out
you're
of 20.
You're 20. I had an early job out of college where I was given an AOL address for work at that company. And so, yeah. That was my one AOL address over the years. And yeah, all 20. And you know what? You look at that list and I feel pretty good. I can't see any of these that are really awful. Like if you said, you know, Grok or something and you go, ugh, or Google, ugh. If you list today's platforms, many of them would leave me nauseated. And I look at these 20 technologies and I think, you know, they're pretty friendly and benign, most of them. It was a different time, Ken, when tools were actually made, to some extent at least, for the benefit of the people using them, rather than for, as Tim Wu would put it, the extractive possibilities for the monopolies running the platforms.
A couple of weeks ago, I found myself in desperate need of a paper map in my car.
Yeah.
My charger wasn't working.
Yeah.
My phone charger wasn't working, and I had like 2% power left. And I was in a city, and I didn't know where the hell I was. I was completely reliant on the Waze app in my phone to get me out of there.
Waze is owned by Google, so
yeah,
you're in trouble already.
I had to pull over and just like futz with the charger and take my phone out of the case and do all these things. And I finally managed to have enough power, but I was like thinking to myself, like, I should have had a paper map.
Whenever I drive a car, I make sure that there's a Rand McNally map or atlas that covers the U.S. just in case.
So tell me about your waterbed, Mark.
It wasn't mine. There was a friend of mine had a waterbed. This is a friend from school. I don't know why this was like middle school. I don't know why he had a waterbed. But did I use it? I mean, I lay down on it once, I think. But
same here. My best friend's parents had a waterbed.
Yeah. So I can't say I used that. You know, I didn't sleep the night on this waterbed. But I really wanted to get 20 out of 20 on this. So I guess maybe 19 and a half. But
I bet you a lot of our listeners. Let's see what people are saying they got. 19. 18, yeah, 20, 18.
I have a little digression about the Rand McNally Road Atlas. This is a print road atlas. I bought one probably 2 or 3 years ago because, as I said, whenever I drive as a backup, I want to have that. And years ago, I would drive a lot, and I would always have a current Rand McNally Road Atlas in the back of the car, and it was just reassuring that every little town in the U.S. was covered in that road atlas. And so I updated the road atlas, like I said, a couple of years ago, and when it arrived, I was flipping through the back because actually I did need to drive up to, I can't remember the name of this little town in upstate New York I was going, but I looked it up in the index, and it wasn't there. And I thought, how strange. Did I get the name of the town wrong? Or why? Rand McNally has every town in the U.S. What's going on? And then I saw the fine print on every page of the index. It said, for the complete listing, go to HTTP. And so it gives you a website address. So the irony is, if you're going to a small town, you don't have any coverage because it's a small town and you're in the middle of nowhere. You reach for your road atlas. The road atlas, a print road atlas, says, please go online to find where this town is. And I thought, that's where we have devolved to, that even a print road atlas can't do its job fully. So here's hoping that 2026 will bring back the age of print materials that actually do the job that they used to do as of, I don't know, even 10 years ago.
Well, there is a movement back to print. WFMU has gone back to print. We're putting out our old print magazine again, LCD.
And that's been well received, right?
Yeah.
People really appreciate getting good materials, thoughtful materials, non-AI generated materials in print where they can hold them.
Yeah, the best compliment I got about the new print editions of our magazine LCD that I got were somebody said that they can now flip through LCD as they're eating instead of doom scrolling.
That's important.
Yeah.
How often do people sit and eat and they have some scrolling feed of awfulness that was determined by an algorithm somewhere? So much better to have a print. And the other thing is, when you're reading something in print, no one is watching what you read. There is no surveillance gear attached to the print. Now, you may have a surveillance camera somewhere in your home watching you, but at least the print thing doesn't have anything on it.
Just don't read anything in the bathroom because your Kohler toilet will somehow detect that.
Well, don't read anything anywhere in your home within view of a surveillance camera, which really I would say people shouldn't have surveillance cameras anyway installed in their home. But there's another article. This is from November 30, 2025. This is from the BBC. And the headline is, over 120,000 home cameras hacked in South Korea for sexploitation footage. And so what's happening here is that people put up their own surveillance cameras, I mean, surveilling their own lives inside their homes, because I think they perceive maybe it makes them safer or reassures them when they're at work. They can look at footage from inside their home, whatever, something like that. But of course, a networked surveillance camera is eventually going to be hacked. And this is exactly what happened. Four people were arrested in South Korea for allegedly hacking more than 120,000 of these video cameras.
Looking for people having sex.
That or any other sort of material, like you're talking about, maybe they're getting funny audio that they're going to put on a right. on a supercut somewhere.
I don't know. I don't even know if hacking is the correct term, because I think a lot of times situations like this, all they're doing is they're putting in the factory default password.
Yes.
People buy these devices. And every device comes with the exact same password.
Default password.
And they tell you to change it, but a lot of people just never change it. So it's not even a hack, really. They're just going around looking for any device they can find, and then they just use the factory default password.
Of course. And that's what the BBC article says. The accused exploited the camera's vulnerabilities, such as simple passwords. And they should have said default passwords, because as you say, Ken, a lot of the cameras will have the same password, something like default or admin.
Or password.
Yeah.
Or 123456.
And so that's how four people can hack 120,000 video cameras and get into the footage.
But a bunch of radio and TV stations in the United States got hacked because a lot of stations use a hardware device called a barracks box in order to stream their audio or video signal going from their studio to their transmitter. And once again, even you'd think that people at a radio station are a little bit more tech savvy, but once again, a ton of them never change the default password,
yeah.
which makes it incredibly easy for somebody to not just get into it, but to take over the broadcast. So they did. They pulled a Max Headroom, and they actually hijacked the broadcast because they were able to get into these barracks boxes.
So what is the? You run a radio station. What is the? If there's someone out there who runs a little station with a barracks box, what's the lesson here?
Change the password. I mean, people hate me because of my complicated passwords. I have a password file. That must be 100 pages.
100, really?
Yeah, 100 pages long.
Wow.
Because I won't reuse a password, and they're just all so insane.
Right.
You know?
Well, I'd agree with that, and I would even go a step further for, not for radio stations, but for people who are considering the surveillance gear to be used at home. You can start by ripping out all of the surveillance gear that's in and around your home now. And then you don't even have to worry about any password. You know, if you don't have a surveillance doorbell from Amazon on your front door, nobody can hack it.
Are you aware of any home cameras that are not surveillance devices? Like, is a Wyze is a home camera supplier. Are they also a surveillance company?
I don't know that particular brand. I know there are some brands, a very few, that work sort of as closed circuit cameras. So you can have a camera that records its data to a local server that, you know, you have in your closet somewhere, and it's not networked. And to me, that's the key. I don't think there's anything, I've said this before, there's nothing wrong with the idea of a surveillance camera per se. You know, if a small business owner wants to have a surveillance camera to catch thieves if they break in at 3 a.m., that's probably a good thing if the footage is stored locally somewhere in a secure place.
Yeah.
The problem is when people buy big tech manufactured surveillance gear, that always sends the data to the big tech surveillance cloud, which the big tech company then uses to train its AI or to process and analyze and create a dossier and then sell off to insurance companies. You know, you want to you want to try to get the good out of technology without doing any business with Silicon Valley if you can possibly avoid it. And so maybe there are some cameras out there, yes, that will give you those benefits and record your security video to a little disk drive in the back of the house or the store. That's fine. It's the networked aspect of it that's such a problem.
Right.
I think we have time for one more story, Ken, and this is a little bit of a curveball, but I just want to tee this up because my spidey sense, Ken, is that we're going to be hearing more about genetics in 2026, because AI is certainly going to continue to be a problem, and surveillance is going to continue to metastasize. The big tech monopolies and their unbelievably unethical behavior and growth at any cost aims are gonna continue to ravage the environment and communities. All of those are gonna continue that we've touched on during this conversation. But I wanna bookmark this because this is a new arena for the tech billionaires to start causing havoc, and that is gene-edited designer babies.
Oh, yeah, and that's happening.
It's beginning. The technology is there. This is from a story in The Economist, November 19, 2025. Tech billionaires want to make gene-edited babies. And the Economist says that there is a question now of designer babies. So the tech billionaires, of course, they're coming out so far and they're saying, no, 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 all we're trying to do is treat disease. And as far as that goes, I'm more or less in favor of these technologies being used to save people and bring healing to people who suffer from terrible diseases. I say somewhat because I don't fully trust what the tech billionaires are doing, but to the extent that it actually helps people, great. But as The Economist points out, it's a small leap from fixing a genetic mutation to engineering gene variants that could be aimed at a person's appearance or even intelligence.
Right.
And what do you think the chance is that the tech billionaires are going to stop at curing disease? What do you think the chance is that they're going to say, no, I'd rather not create designer babies?
Well, they've never done anything harmful before. I don't see how this can go badly at all.
So if you go back and listen to my couple of recent episodes about the inauguration of a feudal society, that's F-E-U-D-A-L society, made of tech billionaires and their minions versus the rest of us, you can just overlay this idea of gene-edited babies onto that system, and immediately you can imagine the possibilities of where that leads us in a generation or two. And that's truly chilling. So I just wanted to bookmark that because we haven't talked very much about genetics on Tectonic before, but I think it's time that we start paying attention to it.
Yeah. And they're still using blood boys, right? Blood boys was a big thing a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago, they wanted to vampirically
get the young blood.
Yeah, they believed that it was
flowing through your frail old body.
The
TV show Silicon Valley used that in an episode or two.
The tech bros are always looking for immortality. They haven't cracked that code yet, but it's just around the corner.
I wanted to mention one thing that we talked about before the show that we haven't gotten to yet, which is that I've noticed, especially even in just the last 6 months, a really severe, aggressive backlash against AI-generated stuff, AI-generated images and music especially. And I notice it among the FMU audience that if they think there's a song that somebody's playing on the show that's AI generated, people get very, very aggressive and angry about it, which is good, except sometimes it's not AI generated.
People are very sensitive to what might be AI generated.
Right.
Yeah, I guess people
And that's new. Even like a year ago, I would sometimes use a jokey AI-generated photo of like Bob Dylan in a hot air balloon accident or something, and everybody would chuckle. Now people are getting really angry about it.
Well, people see AI as a symbol of people being put out of work and the environmental degradation and the politics of the billionaires that are behind these AI systems,
yeah.
All of which are so destructive. So I don't blame them for being a little nervous or concerned about this.
No, I think it's a nice development.
Well,
now if they would kick over more of the Uber food delivery robots.
That's something we didn't have time to discuss, but what's your plan? How many Uber delivery robots do you plan to kick over this year, Ken?
Well, you know, there's so many of them now. They're just like
so many.
Back when I was sabotaging them with like plastic bags and, you know, covering their electronic eyes with plastic bags, there were only a handful here and there.
Now
and
they're everywhere.
They're really just like dozens upon dozens of them everywhere.
All right. Well, I think we have covered every possible angle of technology and the developments we're going to be seeing in 2026. Many of them are concerning, a couple of bright lights. But we have this show, Ken, and I so appreciate you being with me for
this. Thank you, Mark. It's been uplifting.
It has. And you have been listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Dave Mandel and It's Complicated. Until next time, friends, you know what to do. Avoid Apple. Abandon Amazon. Forget Facebook. And whatever you do, get off Google. And hey, it's 2026. Let's have a little party. Have a good one, everybody.
Thank you, Bill Bruford, and yes, they're 38 seconds of weekly fame here. Welcome. This show is called It's Complicated. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here every Monday between the hours of 7 and 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for joining me. Happy New Year to those of you who celebrate. Whether you celebrate or not, my friends, it is a new year, and I hope it's better than the last one. Lots of good music tonight, very good music for you this evening, and I'm going to start the show with something. It's funny, it's an artist I'm very familiar with, but I just happened to hear some of his music this afternoon, and it dawned on me, he is David Borden, and it dawned on me that he is a contemporary avant-garde modern composer, classical, I guess, like contemporary classical, and that's what the music sounds like. But if you just kind of forget about what you know, everything you know about David Borden, and just listen to this like the track I'm going to play, a lot of his music, just cold. It really, really is very proggy, his use of synthesizers. He was a composer and also a keyboard player, is composer and keyboard player. His band was Mother Mallard's Portable Masterpiece Company, so he did a lot of work under that band name and also under his own name. And again, yeah, I wouldn't call him a prog rock artist, but very proggy. And again, if you just listen to this stuff cold, it's really uncanny how much it sounds like classic prog rock. So here we go. This is something from David Borden.